Aloha. Welcome to The Conversation. I'm Yenji Denise in for Catherine Cruz. It's Monday, March 16th. There's renewed scrutiny over how money moves through our political system as Lieutenant Governor Sylvia Luke faces questions about campaign contributions tied to the bribery scandal that sent former lawmakers Ty Cullen and Jay Kalani English to prison. Luke says she did not receive the $35,000 in a paper bag as described by federal investigators and that she's corrected campaign finance reporting errors. At the same time, lawmakers are considering several ethics and campaign finance reform bills this session. We'll explore it all, and we want to hear from you. How do you feel about the role money plays in Hawaii's political system? And if you think it needs to change, what would make the biggest difference? The number to reach us this morning is 808-941-3689. You're tuned to The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. Good morning, I'm Yenji Denise, and today we're talking about money, ethics, and public trust in Hawaii politics. Questions continue to swirl around campaign contributions to Lieutenant Governor Sylvia Luke as the public waits for official results from the State Attorney General's investigation into money tied to the bribery scandal involving former lawmakers Ty Cullen and Jay Kalani English. At the same time, lawmakers are considering several reform bills at the Capitol. We've got plenty to talk about. We're joined this morning by Colin Moore, political scientist at the University of Hawaii, retired Judge Dan Foley, who chaired the state's Commission to Improve Standards of Conduct, and HPR government editor Ashley Mizuo. Welcome to you all. Let's do a little table setting as we get started. Ashley, for listeners who have not been following this closely, can you catch us up to speed on the issues surrounding Sylvia Luke?
Right. So as we talked about in the beginning of the show, you know, there's been this allegation of $35,000 accepted in a paper bag back in January 2022. So, you know, Lieutenant Governor Luke says that in January 2022, she did go to a dinner with Ty Cullen and a lobbyist and his daughter, and they each gave her $5,000 in campaign donations. So she did not report receiving those two $5,000 contributions in 2022, but she did report returning those contributions in 22 on her campaign finance reports. So, you know, about last month, Civil Beat uncovered that missing contribution, and that's what alerted her to, you know, finding that those missing contributions. And she recalled the dinner that she had with Representative Cullen and the lobbyist and his daughter, and said that that led her to think that maybe she might be the one who's being talked about in these court filings, although she says that she did not accept $35,000 in a paper bag and that these were legitimate campaign contributions, which she returned and recorded in 2020. Reported returning in 2022, but then reported receiving just a month ago.
Thank you for that. Colin, this is all feels so convoluted up until this point, and the way the lieutenant governor has defended herself in the public square may have created perhaps more questions than answers for a lot of folks. How do you gauge, you know, how the public has received her message thus far?
Well, there's an old saying in politics, you know, when you're explaining, you're losing. And I think there's been a lot of explaining going on here. This is a very complicated issue. And I think the public has received what they think is as some sort of admission of, error leading to corruption. I don't think that's what the lieutenant governor meant to say. I think she has been pretty clear about trying to explain that this was a mistake made potentially by a volunteer campaign treasurer that she's been trying to clean up. But I think that message has been pretty muddled, and it keeps getting out there in the press. And the more people hear about it, I think the more confused they are. And I don't think that the lieutenant governor has done herself really any favors, because I don't think the public necessarily is getting the message that she's trying to convey, that this really was a clerical error. And it's interesting because, you know, I've talked to a lot of former politicians and current politicians about this, just asking them, you know, how plausible do you find this? And it's interesting because I get two very different responses. One group says, I just don't understand how this could happen, that as a candidate, they were always very paranoid about making sure everything was filed very carefully, because this often gives a potential opponent a very easy way to complain about you. And others say, look, so many of our local campaigns are the treasurers are volunteers. They don't necessarily have a strong background in accounting, that when you go to run for statewide office, all of a sudden you're getting a lot of new donations from people you don't necessarily know, and it can be tough to keep track of. So I think that the lieutenant governor's been basically trying to explain that this really was a clerical error, but I think the public has been getting the message that there's something fishy going on here, and I think it's become very difficult for her to get the message she wants out, which is that, I'm sorry, I just made a small accounting error.
Yeah, Judge Foley, when you think about, you know, what the lieutenant governor says went wrong, that this is a clerical error, for a lot of folks in the public, you know, the idea that you could go to dinner with someone and get two checks for totaling $10,000 and that there would be no strings attached doesn't necessarily feel right to folks. I mean, what is your take? You know, if you take her at her word, she didn't break the law, but does something not pass the smell test?
It really highlights the problem we have, what's referred to as the pay-to-play, where business people, corporations, people that want to influence the legislature make substantial contributions to legislators because they feel it gives them greater access. It's not bribery, per se. It's not illegal. But that's how our system is set up. That's why the commission I chaired recommended a number of bills to prohibit this type of practice, which is legal. And to focus more on public financing of elections as opposed to private contributions.
We did reach out to Lieutenant Governor Sylvia Luke for comment, and we're going to hear from her a little bit later in the program. She did make it clear that she is not planning to comment on the ongoing investigation by the Attorney General, but she has told HPR in the past that she is not the lawmaker, again, who accepted the $35,000 in a paper bag during a meeting with Ty Cullen. Colin, what do you think has been the impact of all of this on public confidence and public, you know, in politics overall?
Well, I mean, on the plus side, I think it has given a little more support to potential good government reforms that have been kicking around for a while. I mean, once again, we're talking seriously about corruption. This is on the top of the mind of voters, which means it's something legislators are focused on. And so I think, unexpectedly, this session, which I don't think months ago anyone thought was going to really have good government bills as a central focus, it has become a focus of the session. So, you know, in that way, if there's any good to come out of this, I think that has been a major result.
Yeah, Ashley, what's the temperature like at the legislature? What are you hearing from lawmakers about their willingness for reforms this session?
Yeah, I think it's really a little bit all over the place, I would say, in terms of the willingness to get some of these bills passed. There are a couple of lawmakers that are very, very adamant about needing things like the contractor loophole closed, which is when, you know, government contractors and their immediate families can give to political campaigns. So that's one of the bills that are moving through. Generally speaking, that one people seem to have kind of a positive outlook on. However, you know, last year it got to the very end of the legislative process in conference after, you know, all the public testimony has been taken and was basically killed last session at the very last second. And so I think while people are supportive of it, it doesn't, it's not clear if that same exact fate is going to happen to a bill like that. There is a lot of appetite for extending the statute of limitations on bribery charges from 6 to 9 years because of these allegations going through about this $35,000 exchange. There seems to be quite a bit of interest in that as well. But I will say one thing that I've think is really interesting is the amount of public interest in these types of bills that I think maybe before it was a lot of advocates pushing for it, but you see a lot more public participation and interest in getting a lot of these types of bills through. And so I think that undeniably has some impact on the way that the legislature is looking at it.
I mean, it was such an interesting start to the session, if you think about it, because it felt like we started with a whodunit. Right. And you had lawmakers now calling for someone to come forward. I mean, just as someone who covers the legislature,
right,
this is very unique.
Yes. And then when you look at even in the House, like the House passed this resolution about having the AG investigate this situation because of like petitions from advocates like Alexander Silver and then also some of the lawmakers like Representative Della Al-Baladi and Representative Kim Koko Iwamoto, who have been very in the forefront, and Kanani Sousa, who had been really in the forefront of pushing the House, at least, to do its own public investigation, I guess, of this, while you're seeing, at the same time, House leadership kind of following the AG's lead and saying that we need to leave it up to her investigation.
Yeah, I mean, Colin, this is a political mystery, if there ever was one.
It is. I mean, it couldn't be better set up than if you were writing a TV mystery. $35,000 of cash in a paper bag. I think there's some question about whether the paper bag really exists. But, you know, I want to go back to a comment that Judge Foley makes, because I think one thing this highlights and for the general public is, I think, a sense of shock that this is how politics is routinely transacted. I mean, that you can go to a dinner and get major campaign donations from people who are doing business with the state potentially. And I think that's partly what's driving this, is it just doesn't seem right. And it's not just legislative leaders who are potentially involved in some sort of pay-to-play system. It's also senior executive officials as well. And I think that, you know, if I'm not wrong, Ashley, I think that there is a bill to limit the ability of major figures in the executive branch to play a role in collecting campaign donations, because that's a problem as well. We shouldn't just focus on the legislators. I mean, often high-level executive officials have been involved in this as well.
Callers, we want to hear from you this morning. Get your thoughts on what's happening at the legislature and in Hawaii politics writ large. The number to reach us this morning, 808-941-3689. Judge Foley, you led the commission, as we said earlier, to improve standards of conduct after the corruption convictions of Cullen and English. That was 4 years ago. Does it surprise you that we are still talking about this same scandal today?
Absolutely not. That's how the legislative process works. You get a bill introduced. What was remarkable about my commission, we proposed 28 bills and 20 passed in the first session. That never happens. And then other bills didn't pass, but were still pending. What happened, though, they all passed the 20 and the 23 session, but then we had the Lahaina fire. So the next session, the fire sucked all the air out of the room. So I was hopeful the legislature would return to the significant measures that we recommended that didn't pass in the next session. But we lost Speaker Scott Saiki. We gained Kim Kokoa Iwamoto, who I like very much too, but Scott was the driver. He created the commission. He introduced all the commission proposals. 26 of the 28 bills passed over from the House to the Senate in the first session, and he wasn't there last year. So I think we missed him. Nothing happened. But this scandal, the $35,000 in the paper bag, has, right, in a good way, brought attention back to the need for reform and given new life to bills that seemed dead last session. So ironically, it's sort of a good thing, not for the person that received the cash, but a good thing in getting good government bills through. The other thing is when the commission was created and we came to the 2023 session, there wasn't a lot of people or a lot of groups pushing these reform measures. Now there are. Mm-hmm. It's a much broader base. The media has played a critical role, including this station, in bringing public attention to it. So I'm very optimistic that a couple of the bills that we recommended, the pay-to-play bill, public financing may be tougher because of the budget, prohibiting legislators from buying tickets to other legislators, fundraising is still alive. So I'm hopeful we'll get a couple more through, but bills take a while.
Yeah, we're going to get into the weeds on those specific bills in just a moment. But I'm curious, you know, you did mention that 20 passed in that very first session. Do you feel like those reforms worked in the way that you had hoped? Now, keeping in mind that the $35,000 in question here obviously changed hands before those reforms were passed.
Well, there was, we had a law enforcement coalition that appeared before my commission, the county prosecutors, the state AG, the FBI, that crafted bills to create state laws on fraud, false statements, and false claims, which we didn't have. That the federal statute, which English and Cullen were being prosecuted under, and other state and county officials, we didn't have equivalent bills. Those passed. And of course, they're only effective for acts that took place afterwards. Some of the bills that some of the pundits call insignificant were not at all. They improved the enforcement powers of the Campaign Spending Commission, the Ethics Commission, which is at the forefront with most campaign violations, passed bills that created greater transparency in terms of filing and disclosure, prohibited lobbyists from making gifts or political contributions during sessions. So if you take all those 20 bills together, I think they're significant. They certainly didn't have any impact in stopping an act that took place before they passed.
Absolutely not. Colin, what are your thoughts on those reforms that were passed before we get into what they're looking at this session?
Oh, I think it's a remarkable success. I mean, and I agree with Judge Foley that former Speaker Scott Psyche was, you know, really created the political will to make that happen. I mean, most of these were about improving enforcement, increasing penalties. You saw a little less action on changing the way campaigns themselves were conducted. I mean, public campaign finance. I know this wasn't part of the Foley Commission's recommendations, but some people had supported term limits. That has never gotten much traction in the legislature. So I think if you want to see what has improved, I think a lot has improved around enforcement, transparency, disclosure, maybe a little bit less on how the campaigns themselves raise money, but maybe we'll see some of that with reforms to pay to play. I agree that we're unlikely to see major reforms in public financing. But in terms of transparency, the results were remarkable. We have, I mean, a very obscure data set, but turns out to be very powerful. The Legislative Administrative Action Report, it's called the LAR data set. And I just want to mention that. It sounds like a really geeky thing to mention, but that means that Hawaii has one of the most detailed state-level lobbying data sets in the country. You can see who's lobbying for on what bills, whether they're for or against. And so we've made great strides. And in this case, I think we're really a national leader.
Yeah. Ashley, how do we sort of make sense of the fact that we are, you know, by those standards, by those measures, a national leader? And at the same time, there is public sentiment that says it's all corrupt.
Yeah, I think part of this, and this is something that I've been speaking with some of the lawmakers about, and, you know, I'm not necessarily thinking that this is the attitude of all lawmakers, but I think some of them are saying, you know, we have really strong laws on the books. It's a matter of culture within the way that politics has worked historically here that is kind of holding back this these good government measures from not necessarily working, but from the perception of them working is due to the culture of politics in Hawaii at large. So it's not necessarily that the current laws that have been passed are not strong enough. It's a matter of seeing how those laws will now work in the future to rebuild that kind of public trust going forward.
Right, Judge Foley. I mean, there's laws and then there's enforcement. I mean, are these actually being put into practice?
Clearly, the Campaign Spending Commission and the Ethics Commission are putting them into practice. The legislature is monitoring its own members. The Attorney General, with a new division funded by the legislature to do investigation and prosecution. The investigation, as the Attorney General has stated, is by the division that the legislature created in the 2022 session. So things are happening. But there'll always be, violations. I mean, fraud, embezzlement, extortion, things like that happen in government service, and of course it affects public trust. So you have a high-profile act like English or Cullen, it really affected public trust. That's why the commission was created. Without those two incidences, the commission wouldn't have existed, these bills wouldn't have passed. But I think we have to take advantage of it. I think where the legislature made a mistake to begin with, when Alexander Silver's petition was being circulated and submitted to have the legislature investigate this so-called $35,000 in a paper bag, by them stonewalling it, and the Attorney General initially stonewalling it, it eroded public trust in both offices. But I think because of the public outrage, the attention of the media, both flipped. And now we're investigating it. And hopefully within a matter of weeks, if there's a full report disclosed to the public by the Attorney General, that could be very helpful in moving back to, you know, identifying one legislator if that's the case. Or if there's more, identify those two and take action against them.
This is The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio, and today we're talking about public corruption and campaign finance reform. We're going to get more detailed into those bills after the break. You can join our discussion by calling 808-941-3689. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The Israeli military has issued these sweeping evacuation orders for much of southern Lebanon, which is similar to what we saw in Gaza. People are afraid that when the war in Iran ends, Israel is going to turn its attention to Lebanon and focus its military capabilities here.
I'm Rachel Abrams. That's Today on the Daily from the New York Times.
Beginning this evening at 6:30.
Support for HPR comes from VertAccount, an outsourced accounting firm in Hawaii. For 15 years, offering accounting and bookkeeping support to local businesses and nonprofits. Learn more at vertaccount.com.
This is The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. I'm Yenji Denise, and our guests in the studio this morning are Colin Moore, political scientist at the University of Hawaii, retired Judge Dan Foley, who served as the chair of the Commission to Improve Standards of Conduct, and HPR government editor Ashley Mizuo. If you're just joining The Conversation, we are talking about public corruption and campaign finance reform, and we'd like to know how you feel about existing public corruption and campaign financing laws. Do they go far enough? What would you like to see change? You can join the discussion by calling us at 808-941-3689. Ashley, you referenced these already, but let's go through them a little more detail. There's a number of measures in play this session to tackle what some see as loopholes in campaign financing. Catch us up on the bills still in play.
Yeah, I think one that is kind of interesting, and Colin referenced it a bit, was a bill that would basically ban lawmakers from being able to buy fundraising tickets to other candidates. And so that's one way in the legislature that money has kind of flowed between, lawmakers who maybe have more campaign funds and are trying to, I don't want to say like anoint their the younger or more freshman lawmakers, but have been able to boost the younger lawmakers to win their reelection campaigns or keep them in the building or even fund, new candidates that they want to see as their colleagues. And one thing that I found really interesting is people are very divided about this bill, about whether or not it would actually do anything to help with this perception of corruption or corruption in general. Some think it's very unfair that, you can go to a fundraiser, collect all these funds from people who are supporting you as a political candidate, and then take your funds that you just got from people who support you and then give them to someone that maybe your funders have not supported. Or, some people say they don't take tobacco funds, but they take political donations from their colleagues who do. And so it's like in other ways too, culturally within the building, this is how, lawmakers will show that they support you. And, even if you're a newer lawmaker and you want to self-impose this rule on yourself, you don't want to accept it, to even infer to a more senior lawmaker and say, I don't actually accept campaign donations from other candidates because I just don't want to participate in that, it's seen as a big slight. So it's hard to self-impose it on your own campaign donations. And so this bill is moving through and it's alive, but there's a big division, I think, culturally within the building about whether or not this practice should continue or not.
Yeah, Colin, you talk to some critics and they basically say this is money laundering.
Yeah. I mean, I think that you can perceive it that way, that, you know, you're in good faith giving money to one candidate and they're moving that money to another candidate. I mean, let me give a counter argument just so folks can understand the other side, which is that, like Ashley mentioned, this is often used to create coalitions to help support a legislator's bid for leadership, to help up and coming candidates get the sort of financial support they need. You know, and I think maybe if I could imagine what a defender of this would say is, you're trusting me with this campaign money to support a political agenda that I represent. And, you know, in that, I think that these other candidates should be part of that. They're going to further this agenda that you donated money to support. Now, I don't find that necessarily to be terribly persuasive, but I should say this is a pretty common practice in politics throughout the country. It's certainly a common practice among federal officials, you know, and there's things that move that go beyond that. But I think for most, this is one of these things that most citizens, when you explain how this works, find very suspicious and probably something that shouldn't be allowed.
Yeah. Judge Foley, what are your thoughts on this practice?
It was strongly prohibiting this practice was strongly supported by Representative David Tarnas. It had no problem passing the House. The problem, ironically, was the Senate Judiciary Committee. Carl Rhodes killed it. And Carl is generally the most supportive senator of government reform, but he killed it for the very reasons Ashley and Colin said it existed. Very open and transparent. He said, us important legislators that chair Ways and Means, Judiciary, we get all the money, so we need to keep it, you know, going to our lesser legislators to control the Senate. I mean, he was very candid and open about it. So for this bill to have a chance, Senator Rhodes would have to change his mind.
Another thing that is on the table, of course, is public financing. I want to go first, before we open to that bill, to a soundbite we have from Lieutenant Governor Sylvia Luke for her perspective on what changes are needed. Ahead of today's program, we did speak to her, and here's some of what she had to say.
One missing part that has not been brought up in the entire public financing discussion is, you know, for me, I have supported different forms of public financing, including the pilot of the Big Island Food Public Financing many years ago. The component that we need to figure out how to control, and you can't because of Citizens United, is the influence of dark money. And 4 years ago when I ran for lieutenant governor, it was pretty clear that I wasn't running against the name opponents. I was running against the Carpenter Super PAC. And they spent, you know, around $4 million into this lieutenant governor's race, which, you know, which is somewhat shocking for a lieutenant governor's race. That's a discussion that needs to happen. And I think that's something that, you know, individuals who are very concerned about the influence of dark money, not just here, but nationally, should pay attention to. And we need to figure out, how do you rein in dark money and how do you rein in super PAC funding? And at the same time, continue to work towards different type of financing mechanism and different type of campaign spending reforms.
So, Colin, just want to get your thoughts on what the lieutenant governor shared there. Of course, her opponent was well-funded, as she did mention, to the tune of $4 million in her last election. Dark money is very hard to control, but public financing is seen as a way to counteract some of that.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, Hawaii has long had a system of public financing. I think folks forget that. It came out of the 78 CONCON. It just hasn't been updated in a very long time. So at this point, the amount of public financing you can get won't make you a competitive candidate. So there's really two proposals to fix that. One is to just improve that system, update it a little bit. I mean, the other that doesn't seem like it's going to pass would be a full public financing system where you reach a minimum threshold for supporters and then you essentially get a state grant. This maybe is less radical than it seems Many other states do have this now, Connecticut, Maine, Arizona, and it seems to work pretty well. I mean, it does remove that connection between your donors and legislative outcomes, or at least it tries to do that. And it can make it easier for candidates to run because they don't have to create all these connections. The dark money, of course, as we know, is much harder to tackle because of Citizens United. There is an innovative approach right now. This bill, SB 2471, which, you know, you might think of as the anti-Citizens United measure. And what this does is it declares that state corporations under state law don't have the power to spend money to influence elections or other ballot measures. It's really redefining what it means to be a corporation in the state of Hawaii. And I think as a political statement, it's pretty significant. I think it would, of course, immediately face a court challenge. And maybe, I don't know if Judge Foley is familiar with this, maybe he has thoughts on how plausible this is. I defer to him on that.
Well, you know, it plays well politically. I agree with Colin. I don't think it will play very well legally. United States Supreme Court equated corporations with people and speech with money under the federal Constitution, First Amendment, as construed by federal courts. It's an issue we struggled with at the commission to improve standards of conduct. And I think the lieutenant governor raises a really good point. You can have public financing, but if you're a candidate, if you're going to be facing a super PAC, you're going to say, geez, I can't limit myself to what I raise and spend because there's no limit on what they can spend to oppose me. So it's I still support public financing. My commission did. I think generally it will improve and make most candidates, you know, most candidates are not challenged by a giant super PAC. You know, just a few of the higher offices, most candidates, more candidates, not relying on private money, pay to play. So I think it'd be a great improvement. But there will be some candidates that politically cannot afford to do so if they have one of these super PACs staring down there.
Yeah, Ashley, I think the thing with public financing that we hear again and again is that the public doesn't really want to see tax dollars spent on political campaigns. There's this perception that I don't want any more of my money going to government to support more government. What are you hearing in the legislature about the bills that Colin talked about?
Yeah, that's a really interesting thing that we're kind of seeing playing out already, like right now, literally during session, about public financing for elections. You know, one of the representatives from the Democrat side, Representative Lisa Kitagawa, she previously has voted yes on these bills, but put out a poll to her constituents, and she said 70% came back saying, no, I do not support publicly funded elections, and that was enough to change her vote to a no. But one thing that, you know, there's the side that people don't want their tax dollars going to fund elections for campaigns, especially if maybe they are a Republican and they don't want to support a Democrat, or they're a Democrat, they don't want their tax money going to support a Republican. But, you know, I spoke with Senator Carl Rhodes about this because he's a big proponent of these partial funded and completely funded, publicly funded elections. And he says, you know, you could be looking at it in a different way where you're going to be holden to some type of money regardless, because there's no way to get money out of politics. And shouldn't you be beholden to your taxpayers completely versus whatever donors that you might be getting? And not to say that everyone's beholden to their donors, but of course there's like that tension there. And so that's kind of where we're at this session with the publicly financed elections. And also it's a tough budget year. And, you know, Senate President Ron Cochi, when asked about this, said that if he has to make the decision to do publicly financed elections or other priorities, he's going to probably pick the more what he views as pressing priorities.
Yeah. And, you know, so much of our conversation this morning and on this issue has really been focused on Sylvia Luke. But a lot of government watchdogs are saying that focusing on a single politician misses the larger picture. We did speak with Cameron Hurt, program manager for Common Cause Hawaii, which focuses on election protection and government transparency. Take a listen.
I think that it's important not to get hyper-focused on Sylvia Luke, because again, this is a systemic issue. We did not get here because of Sylvia Luke. We will not get out of this because of Sylvia Luke. There are several power holders between the executive branch and the legislature who, if they didn't want to see this practice of people just, you know, getting money from funders, they could get rid of it tomorrow if they wanted to, but they want it. They want it because they benefit from it, and they take money that way too. And that's why public interest and support is going to be big, because what's going to end up happening, and it's something that I've been warning about for probably about 2 years, is eventually there will be a cultural shift in the way that people view and participate in elections and the candidate selection process.
You know, Colin, thinking about public participation in elections, Hawaii notoriously has some of the lowest voter turnout in the country. What does this kind of conversation and this sort of cloud over the legislature and of our politicians do to that public perception and that engagement?
Well, it breeds more cynicism. I mean, I think if you were to walk outside and talk to the first person you met and ask them what they thought of public corruption in Hawaii, they'd probably just roll their eyes and say, well, of course, you know, this is typical, this is to be expected. And, you know, that makes it, for people, citizens, much more, less likely to participate. I mean, to really trust the legislative process if they believe that there are really some key power brokers that control everything and their voice doesn't matter. Now, I happen to think that's largely untrue. I'm not that cynical. And I think that too often we probably do, Neil Milner, I had a great column on this in Civil Beat, too often we do attribute all of the problems in the state to corruption. I mean, incompetence and mistakes are one thing. That if you can't blame everything on corruption. But at the same time, I think that we do have a sense that our local government just isn't working, and too many elected officials and other officials are somehow involved in this network of insiders. And, you know, there's some truth to that. If you look at, you know, Blaise Lovell in the New York Times did a tremendously important story about how what percentage of campaign funds are raised by people who receive state contracts. It's a relatively small group. And so, you know, there is a sense that some voices are heard much more clearly than others. So I think that's where you get that cynicism. And then the result is that you have lower voter turnout, less participation. You know, some of that is due to the fact that this is a one-party state, that voters often don't feel like they have a lot of choice. You know, and that's one of the reasons I've long supported public financing, is I think, you know, and I agree that it probably wouldn't move the needle so much on the high-level races for governor, because that dark money will still play a role there. But by encouraging first-time candidates to run for office, to challenge incumbents, which is what you want, I mean, that creates a dynamic political environment. I think that could help.
Ultimately, we want choice. This is The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. I'm Yenji Denise, and today we are talking about public corruption and campaign finance reform. You can join our discussion, too, by calling us 808-941-3689. Stay with us. We'll be right back after this break.
Support for HPR comes from Aloha Air Cargo, connecting Hawaii by providing inter-island shipping with services including Aloha Next Flight Out, Aloha Standard Overnight, and Aloha Economy. AlohaAirCargo.com.
HPR is inviting you to a special Live from the Atherton Storytellers event celebrating 65 years of Hawaii Youth Opera Chorus. Our own DJ Mermaid will discuss opera in Hawaii with choral director Nola Nahulu, plus special performances from the Youth Opera Chorus. Join us Saturday, March 28th at 2 p.m. Tickets and details at hprtickets.org. Sponsored by HMSA.
Support for The Conversation comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, which helps Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk shows. Mahalo to contributor PCAT, Pacific Center for Advanced Technology Training.
Welcome back to the conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. We are speaking this morning with Colin Moore, political scientist at the University of Hawaii, retired Judge Dan Foley, and HPR government editor Ashley Mizuo, and we are talking about campaign finance reform and public corruption. You know, Ashley, as you continue to report on this story, what are the key things that you're watching in the weeks ahead?
Yeah, I mean, obviously to see if a lot of these bills get scheduled. Crossover was when the big deadline when bills have to make it out of their originating chamber was this past week. So it's kind of in some way starting from a fresh slate. A lot of these bills have that we're talking about, they've all crossed over to their respective chambers. And so we'll see if, you know, the House or the Senate has the same opinion on whether or not they want to see these bills move. And I think one thing that's like been brought up a lot about this publicly funded election bill and the, you know, talk about publicly funded elections is a lot of these lawmakers, you know how to get elected on the current system. And that's what some of this pushback we're seeing, especially also with the bill we were speaking about earlier with buying fundraising tickets for other campaigns. Like these are the ways that, you know, current lawmakers, a lot of them have been able to get elected in this current system. So it's a kind of, you're asking them to change something that they already know how to work. But we do see a lot of the freshman lawmakers coming up who, or the newer lawmakers who, you know, will have done things like take the Our Hawaii Pledge, where they're not going to take money from corporate donors or taking small grassroots donations instead. And a lot of them have been able to beat out big incumbents, like Representative Kim Koko Iwamoto, who was able to beat out former House Speaker Scott Steike. And so there is seem to be some shifting in terms of how lawmakers want to be elected.
We do have a caller on the line. Good morning, Nikki Halananda. I would love to hear your thoughts on public finance.
Oh, thank you very much. That is the only system that's needed is public financing. And yes, all of a sudden now people are talking about not taking PAC monies, not taking money from big corporations. Sadly, the Supreme Court ruled that money is speech, and that's destroying our elections. And I hear the conversation constantly about it's a one-party state, which it is, but there's more than just the two parties. There's the Green Party, Libertarians, and Independents. So, yes, unless there's public financing, there's a pool of money, and you cannot get money from someplace else, it is unfair because look at the bank accounts of people, millions of dollars, and that locks out all kinds of people. And Kim Koko had a name. That's a exception to the rule.
Okay, thank you so much for that comment. Colin, curious to get your thoughts on what public financing could do for some of those smaller parties in our state.
Well, I mean, I'm not so sure I think that public financing is going to make the Green Party or the Libertarian Party immediately competitive. I think what it's likely to do is to create many more challenges to incumbents because one of the hardest things for running for office is raising the money, and you have to raise a fairly significant amount of money, particularly if it's not an open seat, if you're trying to defeat someone who's already elected. And what does that money do? It buys you name recognition. It lets the public get to know you. I mean, one thing we should be clear on is money isn't the problem. I'm happy to have money in politics. I think money can be great in politics. Money is a way where you allow the voters to know who you are, what you believe in. It's that the money comes from a very small group of people who, if they expect nothing else, it's access, which means that their priorities become the priorities of the legislature. And that's something that I think public financing can help us solve. Now, I also understand that, you know, there are many voters who are skeptical of this. They don't want to necessarily see more tax dollars go. I mean, I would often argue that this isn't a lot of money in the grand scheme of things. And there are other ways this has functioned. I mean, some places, most notably the city of Seattle, gives voters vouchers so voters can determine where their share of the public financing goes. And that I think is a little more popular than just a full-on grant system.
What a creative system. That's so intriguing. All right, let's go to Joshua now, who's on the phone. Josh, what's your question?
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking my call. Over the weeks of hearing of this coverage, I haven't heard it be spoken of, and maybe it's due to whistleblower confidentiality. But who witnessed the transaction of this $35,000 go down, and who reported it, number one? And number two, how is it that they're unable to share the people who, either the giver or the receiver of such funds?
Those are the questions that we all want to know. Judge Foley, when you think about the Attorney General's investigation, it does feel like a bit of a black box. What are we expecting to hear from her?
Well, we'll see when we see. I mean, she's promised to do a thorough investigation. How broad it will be remains to be seen. If it's focusing just on this so-called transaction, the $35,000 in a paper bag, which the federal government had already investigated and turned over to her, and that should be done fairly quickly. If for some reason she broadens her investigation, you know, beyond that, it's going to take more time. But she's committed to a transparent disclosure, and we'll see exactly what she finds and concludes. And then we'll see if she did a good job or not and what needs to be done afterwards. But, you know, the caller mentioned, where did this come from? It came from Ty Cullen as an informant, set this up. And we'll all find out, I think, in a matter of weeks, I do, what actually happened.
And we're all finding out, Colin, in the midst of an election year, you know, going back to the beginning of our conversation with all these questions swirling around the lieutenant governor. Just briefly, what do you think comes next for her?
Well, she's going to fight for her political life. I mean, this is she has to win re-election in a primary where she will likely see a challenger. I think that there have been rumors that Kauai Mayor Derek Kawakami will now run for this seat. And, you know, she has gone from being, I think, an incumbent that everyone thought would easily win re-election to an embattled incumbent who will have to convince her supporters to stick with her and really explain again and again to the public her side of the story, that this really was a clerical error. Now, I think if Mayor Kawakami runs, you know, he will offer an alternative, a well-known alternative. I think he'll have some prominent backers. And, you know, the trouble for Lieutenant Governor Luke is that any opposition campaign is going to remind voters of this again and again and again and again. And it'll be very hard for her to escape it. And I think even us around the table, I mean, have had a difficult time sort of explaining exactly what went on. And in politics, that's deadly, because if you're campaigning for re-election, people get an idea of who you are, and that can be very, very difficult to change. And I think that's going to be the trouble with for the lieutenant governor.
Yeah, Ashley, as Colin just mentioned, Kauai Mayor Derek Kawakami did put out a press release saying that tomorrow he's going to be having a press conference about his political future. That could be the challenger. There could be others. How strong of a candidate do you think that Kawakami is, and what does this all mean for the lieutenant governor?
Well, I mean, Mayor Kawakami has, you know, name recognition, at least on Kauai. He is very close with our Governor Josh Green, because, you know, the governor and the lieutenant governor do not run on the same ticket. They run completely separate campaigns. So that doesn't necessarily mean anything that they're close, but they are allies and they are friendly. And I think that, you know, Mayor Kawakami is really able to raise a lot of funds. I think he has about $200,000 currently in his war chest ready to go. That was a big before all of this happened. And so, I mean, he would be a powerful challenger for sure.
Yeah. Judge, when we think about this, the results of this investigation, you know, if it comes out that it is someone totally different than the lieutenant governor, if there's a, you know, there could be a whole new political, you know, climate that we are talking about. Do you think that this will close this discussion once and for all when the Attorney General's report comes out?
No, it shouldn't stop the discussion. And I agree with the spokesperson from Common Cause. The focus shouldn't be Sylvia Luke. The focus should be the law, pay to play. What Sylvia Luke was doing at that dinner was probably what her opponent was doing at another dinner the same night, taking checks from contributors to run, because that's the way the system is designed. That's why that bill that's pending in the legislature needs to pass to close the loophole, that people that do business with the state and the county and receive contracts shouldn't be allowed to make contributions to candidates. And if the public finance bills don't pass, at least this bill should pass. So the outrage about what Sylvia Luke did at that dinner is misplaced. The outrage should be with the system, the pay-to-play system. What she did was legal, what her opponents were doing. Her problem was she didn't have a timely, accurate filing with the Campaign Spending Commission, which generally just results in a small fine.
Yeah, Colin, let's go back to the larger issue. I mean, what's difficult is that the folks who are passing the reforms are the ones who are going to be impacted. Do you expect real change this session?
You know, I'm at my heart an optimist, but I'm skeptical. I'm really skeptical that the core pay-to-play bills are going to pass. We've seen some of these bills move very far in the legislative process in the past and then haven't made it out of conference, have been somewhat mysteriously killed. I think legislators are not anxious to speak out publicly against these bills, but I think many of them hope that they'll go away because this is a system they understand. This is a system that has allowed them to get elected, and I think that there is concern that, you know, this will upset a political system that they know and understand well. So I maybe one of them will make it through, maybe a few, but I wouldn't get my hopes up too much because we've seen them get this far in past sessions.
Ashley, we're just about out of time. I want to get a final thought from each of you. Where do we go from here? And we'll be watching your reporting very closely in the next few weeks.
Yeah, I mean, we'll just have to see if these make it through. I think one thing that we didn't get to really about that we were talking about regarding publicly funded elections is that one of the bills that has already died this session would have forced people who have excess funds in their campaign war chest to have to give that to fund publicly funded elections. So that's not, taxpayer money is not the only method forward, but that does seem to be the way that the legislature is forcing people to go with, because those are the bills that they pass, and they don't pass these other bills that would force them to give up some of their campaign funds to fund publicly funded elections.
Mm-hmm. Judge Foley, final thought this morning.
You know, I chaired the commission to improve standards of conduct as a private citizen. It followed up in the legislature as a private citizen, here as a private citizen. So my message to your listeners was never give up. Despite the odds, fight it. Go in there. Otherwise, you're responsible for the status quo. Legislators will respond to their constituents. I was on the losing side on same-sex marriage. They responded to their constituents. If they feel it's going to make a difference at the ballot box, they'll listen and they'll respond. So talk to your legislators.
Yeah, Colin, final thought this morning. We talked a lot about erosion of public confidence in the process, but we still want folks to stay engaged and absolutely vote.
That's right. I mean, look, the people who vote are the people who get attention. Legislators know who comes out to vote. And I think I want to just echo what Judge Foley said. If you care about these issues, let your legislators know. I think there's sometimes a perception that only activists, only a small group of good government scolds really pays attention to this. So if you do, let your representative know, because that's what will lead them to support it, if they think that their own constituents are paying attention.
That's a great call to action and a great place to leave us this morning. We want to thank our guests, Colin Moore, Ashley Mizuo, and Judge Dan Foley. And we thank you, of course, the listener, for joining us on today's program. If you have a comment to share about today's show, call our talkback line at 808-792-8217. You can also send us an email at talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org. And if you'd like to listen back to today's show, download the conversation as a podcast on Spotify or Apple, or search for the show on hawaiipublicradio.org. I'm Yanji Denise. Thanks so much for being with us today, and join us tomorrow for more of The Conversation.